Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show-jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 3 with Tom Brennan of Millhouse Stud.
If you could buy back any filly or mare that you previously sold, who would it be and why?
Thought about that loads of times. And there was a filly I sold to Norway. It was an Imperius filly because of her blood. She was the most blood filly you would have had. We had two horses at the same time. We had a gelding and a filly by Imperius. Max, how are you about the gelding? And Tom O'Dwyer, the late Tom, two of them are dead now. The two people bought each of them are dead. Tom O'Dwyer bought it and I went to Norway. And I don't know where it went to or who it went to. But I asked Tom afterwards, would he be any chance of getting her back? And he said no, that they'd gone to a good home. They didn't need to be bought back, and they were doing, they had their own lab for doing embryo transfers and everything out of it.
How old would it be now?
Oh Lord, what would it be now? Sold out of Mill Street 20 years ago. Oh, 20 okay. Years ago. It's well gone now. But she was just an out and out model of a mare, and all the blood in the world, and she had all the blood in her jump and everything, and she would have been some, be, you know, grandmother of something now of this stage that I'd love to have had in the place. I often thought of that question before. We try to keep the fillies all the time, and we generally don't let a filly go if the family is in danger of getting lost. We'll always have to have a filly before it will go.
What was your first big break for your breeding program, or the first time you felt momentum of real significance in the breeding program?
Like we sold plenty of horses along the way that went on and did lots of good things. Most of our original horses went through Max Howery, and you wouldn't have heard an awful lot about them until Max had come back and say that they've done well. But the modern game, you can follow any horse you've sold, so it's much easier to trace and you get more information back on how well they've gone. The first real horse that we sold a horse called he ended up Lorna Piana Have a Go. He went to Italy again. Would you believe it's by Imperius? It was out of a King of Diamonds mare. We bought it to Mill Street in the Young Irelander. Seamus Hughes, my uncle, judged him. He told my mother not to bring him to the qualifier that he was judging, because he had seen the horse before, he loved the horse. Mammy, of course, decided to go anyway. And then he couldn't put the horse in the lead, or he couldn't put our lad to win the class, so he put him second. And then he actually went to try and buy the winner himself. And the guy he was buying the horse, trying to buy the horse from, he said, I loved the horse to finish second, but Seamus couldn't tell him. That was actually our horse, that it was his sister's horse. They'd play second. Anyway, we brought that horse to Mill Street, and in the Young Irelander, he was jumping super, but the cavesson broke, and the horse ran around the place for a while, and ended up finishing sixth or eighth. And then we jumped it as a four-year-old. I think we jumped it three times as a four-year-old the following year, and at Christmas time, around this time, it was back in 1990, 1991, Tommy Brennan rang us up looking for it, and Frank Kernan rang us up looking for it, and Noel C. Duggan rang us up for some reason. They all decided at Christmas time this horse was to be bought. And we didn't sell it then, but we did sell it the following May, and we sold it to Italy through Tommy Brennan. To Enrico Padroni, fantastic buyer at the time as well. And it went to Filippo Myerson, and as an eight-year-old, it finished placed in the Grand Prix of Modena in Italy. That was probably the first time we realised, hey, we had a horse, a real good horse that we knew was a three-year-old, and he went on and did something later on that we actually followed, and it showed us that we can do it. We can do it if we have the right article, if we have the right horse, the right model, doing it right, that we can actually breed a horse that can compete at the world stage. Now this is only an eight-year-old. He actually died shortly afterwards. He had an accident in Italy that the owner actually... He went to do a veterinary procedure himself, and it went wrong, and he lost the horse. But the horse actually appeared on the front page of the Italian version of the Horse and Hound. Like, that was a feather in our cap at that time, way back, and it was, we were thrilled. We were thrilled at the time, and I kind of said, "That's the way we have to go. Get for blood." It probably taught us the type of horse that you need for the modern game, because he was a real blood horse, lovely horse. At the same time, the very same 3-year-old competition, actually, we had a Royal Athlete as well. He ended up going to Max Howery, and he won the junior European medal for Marcus Howery. And he was a very, very good horse as well. And that's what actually led us into the going global line down the road afterwards. But those two horses showed us, I suppose, at that stage. And that was back in 1991. And that led us to believe, do it right, and we can hit the bullseye. We didn't actually breed Royal Athlete. We bought Royal Athlete as a yearling. They were lovely horses out of the field. As two yearlings, you pick your horse, you pick your future horses that you think are going to go on as young horses out the field in their bunches. You'd be saying, you like that one or you like that one, and you'd follow them through, and these two were lovely, two lovely horses, and we brought them in, they didn't disappoint, and probably led us to where we are now. Kind of concentrate on those lines, mm-hmm. and like that's the way you refine it.
When you're assessing new foals, or when you're assessing your newborn foals, what are the main things that you're looking for?
Normally the foal just out the field here, generally just outside the house, and I go out, and Sinead can actually ring me when I'm out in the field to ask me what I think of the foal, and the foal is not even up at this stage, and she's asking me what. So you're looking for, you're not going to be able to judge about the foal on the ground, but you'll give an opinion. You're looking for, first of all, the first thing I look for is a filly. I want a filly every time, rather than a colt. I must be the most weirdest guy going, but I prefer a filly than a colt every time. I don't let my judgment of the foal be formed for about a month. Of course, you'll have instant reaction to the foal when he gets up. Is it big enough? Is it scopy looking enough? Does it move well enough? Is it attractive? Has it blood? Is it straight? All the silly things then that you need. And is it a good, a good canter when it goes into a canter? Is it balanced? Is it stuff? When it gets into a month or two, generally then you see what the foal is going to be later on. They're filled out and their body structure is the same as what they're going to be nearly when they're a 3-year-old. And then from a foal through the year and 2-year-old stages, they'll actually go through different stages where you might like them or dislike them, generally on the way they grow.
And do you find, say, even over the last recent number of years, that the special foals have usually been the ones that were the special 3-year-olds?
Yeah, well, I find that the best 3-year-old comes from the same mare 9 out of 10 years, okay, or at least the same mare lines. So we've concentrated the mare lines here onto some of the breeds that actually worked. We got rid of, say, when the downturn came, maybe it's accentuated what we wanted to do. We stopped breeding out of trying to have 20 foals out of 20 mares, and we concentrated on 5 or 6 mares and tried to take a number of foals out of those. Now we haven't got back to the 20 foals yet, but we will get back to it again. But you definitely find that the foal you like, generally you like him again as a 3-year-old. It might take till 4 with some of them. It might take till 4, but generally at 3 you'll see again what they have at that stage. Mammy used to love foals. Mammy would, first thing she'd do after getting up in the morning, after you have a foal, come out to see the foals. She would be more into the foals than me. Like, of course, at that stage all I wanted was selling horses, get horses sold and all this, but she used to love going up to see the foals. She'd in later life there, in the end, she'd come out and she'd wander up along there at mid-morning, and she'd be out to see the foals, and that was the first thing she'd do.
Did you always agree on your same favourites?
Two people never agree on everything, okay? But we had similar beliefs, similar things, and blood is number one. Yeah. I mean, Mammy loved blood, I love blood.
That's what a lot of the foundations here were built on.
Yeah, blood. People have different concepts of what blood is. I am not a believer in the percentage blood job that everyone goes on. You'd see it in their step, you'd see it in their canter, you'd see it in their head, you'd see it in their mind, you'd see it in different things about them, a character and everything, you know. We're always on the same wavelength, and we had the same appreciation of what was in front of us a lot of the time.
Yeah.
The breeds we liked, we each liked the same family lines, and that helped us appreciate what we had in front of us, yeah.
If you could have dinner with any living equestrian personality, who would it be and why?
Does my wife have to hear this answer?
No, no, no. We'll send her the censored version.
I'd like to, of course, it'd have to be Jan Tops, I'd say, and he'd want to have drunk a bottle of wine first, and I'd want to be sober, and then I could have maybe get him to agree on a few things. He's such a huge figurehead in the business nowadays, and he's forming the whole business the way it's going, and he seems to be very, very knowledgeable, and he seems to be not making too many mistakes. His vision for what the game is going to be is probably where the game is going to go. As he seems to be the driver of it all. Definitely like to sit down and have a conversation with him, yeah. With no agenda. I'd have an agenda, but he might have an agenda. Okay. But you know, I used to be joking to Sinead saying, I'm going to wait. I know when I'm somebody when Jan Tops rings me rather than me ringing Jan Tops. Okay. So the day he rings me, I know I've got to where I want to be. Okay. If I have to ring him, I'm pushing it. Okay.
What do you hope to achieve in the next 5 years from a breeding program point of view?
I would love to have a fair reflection of, in numbers of foals, out of the mares that I am doing the embryos and stuff on, for the work we're putting into it, and then I would be happy. because I love the mares we have, and I do think the mares will, if I could get 10 foals out of a particular mare, I would, there's no guarantee, but I would have a fair idea that 7 to 8 of those would be heading towards the special area, because that's the type of mare we're keeping at the moment, if I can use the stallion I want to use at that given time. So if my plan for the next 5 years, you're saying, would be to maximise the mares we have by getting as many embryos out of them as we can and rearing them then as successfully as we can and have a normal look with them. But if I can have, you know, one good horse is probably enough for you each year. If you could get one good horse, but you never know which is the one good horse. So if you could have 10 to pick the one out of, but all having the same chance, you'd have a right, you know, that's the idea. But I'd like to be able to leave each of the kids with a good foundation mare or two to go down the road. I'm not planning on leaving this place yet either, but at the same time, I have to keep thinking ahead what I want for the kids and stuff like that.
Was there a particular horse that you bred who looked very special but just didn't get the opportunities to reach its full potential? Like, was there one over the last few years maybe that you thought, you know,
should have gone on but then hasn't?
Yeah, that you were on something really special, but maybe it just didn't go down the path that it needed, or something happened to it far too early?
5 out of 10 horses will go that way. 9 out of 10 horses will go that way, that you, they're going down the road. We had a very, I thought we had a very good example, MHS California. She was a sister to Primetime won in Dublin, but Primetime's also a broodmare in the farm now as well. But When Going Global was a 3-year-old, and Primetime, the two of them were field buddies. Two of them were same breeding, they're by Guillaume Jr. We actually always thought that Primetime was the better of the two, okay? And lots of people around here would have thought the same way as their 4-year-olds and 4-year-old career and stuff like that as well, 3 and 4-year-olds and that. But she actually got injured very early as a 5-year-old, and while we tried to wait for her and fix it and stuff like that, it never actually came to being. But she did win the 7-year-olds in Dublin. She was the top 7-year-olds in Dublin. She finished second in the class, but she was Going Global was third to her, and she was second. And Eddie Maloney rode her, and she was an absolute a pet of a mare, a brilliant mare altogether, but never got her chance. So she definitely have regrets that she never made it. And because she went wrong, I actually took her sister, which was California, which was a mare I was always going to have as a brood mare, I thought. From the time I saw her as a foal up the field, she was one of these, you're definitely a brood mare. So I kept her, I tried to put her in foal at 3, and we couldn't get her in foal at 3, and we couldn't get her in foal at 4, and then Primetime went wrong, so I actually said, okay, I can't get this one in foal now, I'll put her back into jumping. So we broke her at 4/5, and we jumped her, and oh my God, she was fantastic to jump, but whether we left her too late to break her, or we did something wrong along the way, we just found her, we just couldn't ride her. We couldn't get the control we wanted and the riding to get her to where we wanted. So she actually ended up back in the broodmare herd, but she had some unbelievable jump. So I'm looking forward. I have a yearling out of her by, a yearling of a 2-year-old actually now. Today is it's January. We have a 2-year-old out of her now by Louis Dam and a yearling. And they look super. They look super and they're so active. So active. And they're actually blood for Louis Dam's out of Opus Qualities, out of Cavalier, Diamond Serpent, Imperius, Clairmans. Awful lot of quality there. Awful lot of quality there. So I think she'll be a real special broodmare for me. So that's why I like to go out and find my fillies at the fields, because I realise that if something goes wrong on them, you know, yeah. if Frankel hadn't gone to the right hands in the turbid business, like what? He was a runaway. He could have been anything. Like if he had gone into the wrong hands, he'd never have won the guineas and all the races he won. He wouldn't become the superstar he is, because Henry Cecil just had the way with him and was able to keep him calm and work him and everything. If he'd gone into a place where he wasn't minded, he would have been sold as a cast-off at some stage because he wasn't controllable.
If you could own any living mare in the world,
broodmare,
or for breeding,
yeah,
who would it be and why, other than Goran Lady?
I go for DSP Alice. Why? I'm not going on her just out of her breeding and all the rest. Just, wouldn't she be a great broodmare to start off with again, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And that's kind of an answer in a nutshell. That's a quick answer for you now. Look, when you go down to, when you watch the show jumping and you watch the top end of it, like go to Geneva, go to Aachen, and watch those classes and see a good filly in that class. Now, the fillies are predominantly hot when they come out. They're generally hot. The stallions then, when you look at them off the field, are generally a bit on the stronger side of life, if you were to be. So it's the cross, you know, you need this blood filly to cross, because 90% of the stallions are a little bit stronger than the model you'd actually prefer if you were to look at them and pick them as a jumble. So you need this kind of a blood filly with all the blood in them to get the end product that you like. Now some people mistake that for thoroughbred blood. I don't mean mistake it, but they call it a thoroughbred blood. So Alice looks like she has lots of that stuff, and she's not caught for scope when she's jumping. And so if you had a foal out of her by Demont or whatever you want to be. You could advertise it as being a potential 160 anyway, and might get a call or two.
She's probably an interesting example of that, maybe sometimes confusion of blood here, where if you looked at her thoroughbred percentage, it's probably not overly high, but if you looked at her as a
model,
as an individual,
yeah,
she's a blood mare.
Yeah. You're asking me what mare would I pick? Alice. Yeah, I pick Alice, but you know, I'm happy with some of the mares I have. I'm not saying they're better than Alice, I'm not saying that. But I'm happy with what the potential that the mares I have on the place. They actually excite me. Breeding them at the moment excites me. I mightn't have got the right cross to them yet, but I know when I will, that there will be a special one in it. Absolutely. And then there's some very, very, very nice followers coming through. You know, this with the embryo, it allows you to, you know, we got a couple of embryos out of a two-year-old this year. That wouldn't be our normal thing to do. But the other ones weren't going quite as well, so we actually pulled in a couple of 2 year olds to try and get the numbers up. You can do them at 2 and 3. You know, you have horses that look like potentially being, you know, maybe you're earmarked them to being a really good horse, and you can have a couple of foals out of them before they come along. It's an exciting time. Breeding is brilliant if you can get it right.
What's been your proudest moment as a breeder?
Just the obvious thing is to say going global, jumping in the Olympics. But it's actually going global, being the horse he is. We loved him as a foal. We loved him all along. We thought he was going to be special. How special? You never know how special they are until they go down. Like if you don't know you have 160 horses until they jump 160 tracks. So you think you have. You hope you have. We thought we had. We did have. And it's just, when he comes on the telly now, the commentators just wax lyrical about him. It's not. It doesn't make your head big. It's not a case of just going, well, it's just, it's a vindication of what we've done for the last 30 years. Like going global to us started 30 years ago, 1991 originally, when we sold Royal Athlete, and then we went back and bought all Royal Athlete's sisters, and it is out of one of those, the grandmother of going global, and one of them is the mother of Royal Athlete, who was a very good horse in his own right as well. He wasn't a 160 horse, but he was a very nice horse. I remember Barry O'Connor telling me at the time he was the most commercial horse he ever saw, in that he was so saleable, you could sell him in any corner of the world. Okay, he and Athena go around and jump a super round. Clear round. They did the first clear round in the Grand Prix in Doha, was it? Clear rounds were scarce, but they did a wonderful job between the two of them. And it's great to see it. It's great to see it. And even better to see it when you know you have brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and nieces and nephews, and huge potential in your mind what you're going to do with that breed all along the way. But you know, it's fun. It's fun. And then you know, I get a kick out of Jack jumping horses here for ourselves as well. That's only a father's way. That's gone away from a breeding end of things.
Well, it's a double whammy as a breeder. You're responsible for the horse and child.
We're not getting into that. That's his mother, because his mother is 80% of everything, okay?
And in this case, 90 maybe.
Thanks very much. I like compliments too. There's lots of things. I as a breeder, it's definitely going global. And then there's other things then that challenge me or want to excite me along the way. The kids doing whatever they're doing. That's a totally different game. But it is part of it now. I always had a dream that when I thought I had the potential to be able to do the breeding nice horses, I said I want, would now love to have be able to breed the 4 horses for the Aga Khan, okay? It's a joke. It's a kind of a joke. It's a challenge. It's a driving thing. But I said to myself, if I challenge myself to do that and I fall 50% short, I still have 2 of them on the thing. Or if I do 25%, I still have another one on the horse. So, like, I aim. I try to aim high. And once I'm up that high, I always have a higher goal than all the rest. Sinead knows I'm a glass half full. It's actually 3/4 full with me all the time. It's never half full. It's even 3/4 full. Even when it's empty, it's 3/4 full, okay? Definitely. And Pat Lachlan is a cousin of mine in Gordon. And Pat says that I'm unique and like a horse. I can dream standing up, okay? Because as I talk, and I'm dreaming the whole time.
Yeah.
So,
what advice would you give to a young breeder or to someone starting off in their breeding career? Or what advice would you give to yourself if you met 20-year-old Tom heading out into the breeding world?
Definitely Tom would have to find the same wife anyway, okay? But we'll get off that question again. 20-year-old Tom. I don't think me even talking to 20-year-old Tom would have worked. Definitely not. It's a very expensive game to get into, okay? For me, 90% of it is the broodmare. I'll say 80, but it's in my head it's 90. So if you're starting off, you could start like we did, and for 30 years you could try and improve the breed and improve the breed and improve the breed and improve the breed, doing it on a slow base and all the rest. But it's a very, very, very slow process. So if we're starting off again, I'd go to my bank manager and I'd twist his arm some way and I'd try and buy into a breed that's already there. That can be anywhere in the world. And I'm not saying that it's in Upper Grange or anywhere else, or in Images. It's somewhere in the world. Buy as good a breed as you can. And even if you want to do, get a buddy to come in with you. And then get twice your income, twice the money you're trying to spend, and buy a really, really good filly. And buy a good filly, maybe as a foal, a yearling, two or three, or something of that range. But buy what you can afford, or as far on as you can afford. And then think of the embryo option. If you keep a broodmare, it's a long, long, long term. Like, the market is looking for a top 7-year-olds now. Now, you can sell them as foals, you can sell them as 2-year-olds, you can sell them as 3-year-olds, you can sell them all along the way. But the market is predominantly looking for an 8-year-old rather than a 7-year-old, but an 8-year-old. That's nearly 10 years down the road for any program. And I don't think your bank manager would run with a 10-year program like that in horses. If I was to start again, I would go out and buy as good a filly as I could and then try and take 3 or 4 embryos out of her and then sell her when I can recoup my money plus a bit more money out of it, and then have maybe 5 or 6 animals coming on out of her to pick my best one again and do it again. The business has moved on so quickly. Every 5 years, if you came back and asked any of the breeders, they'll say, Jesus, there's no way 5 years ago you got the tots going to get to where it is now. But it's accelerating at an unbelievable rate. That to stay up level with it, you have to be really improving all the time. So that's why breeding out younger horses is so important, as against waiting until the horses finish jumping at 14 and then breeding over for the next 6 years or 7 years or something. She's already 15 years behind where her genetics started off. So it's very important to be hitting them when they're younger and improving the genetics already, you know, at the 3-year-old stage, by hitting them with the best stallion you can. So you're kind of staying with 90% of your thing in the mirror the whole time and just improving it and getting it up all the time.
Yeah,
otherwise,
fast tracking, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't fast track it, I think you're going to get left behind. It's too late. It's too late by the time a mare is finished jumping to go breeding out of her, I think. And that's why people find that they say that an animal that jumps doesn't really produce something that's in general, that they say they don't breed one that's as good as maybe what they were themselves. But I think they get left behind a little bit in the genetic front. But going forward, definitely the embryos. Ixie, I'm not a fan of Ixie. Just my own personal idea is that Ixie, when people are buying these embryos, the Ixie embryo, the semen, there's less selection on the semen. The semen is put onto the egg, as against the in any other form of insemination, the strongest semen, the strongest one gets there. Mm. So there's a bit of competition, whereas the other way, you know, you could be unfortunate. Like if a million sperm are released in one covering, and one gets there, like there's a fair good lad got there. Okay, he has to be a winner anyway. Whereas if you're going to put him in a test tube and put him in, he could be the fella that was at the back of the class, and you covered your mare with him, and you don't know until he gets to 7 or 8 what's going to happen. So down the road there could be a ticking bomb going to go off and go, Jesus, all these embryos are not going to work out like they were supposed to be. That's just my call on it. I'm not saying I'm right. That's just my silly idea. Mm. If you're not able to get anything out of a mare and you get something by Ixie, that's better than nothing, in my opinion. But I definitely do approve of the embryos, and I don't think it has any bearing on the foals whatsoever of the produce. But I am a little bit wary of the Ixie job myself, okay? For a young guy starting off, I'd say aim high and attack it with 100% of your ability. You're going to get knocks. So you're going to have to really trust yourself, back yourself, and definitely know what you want to breed. If you're enthused by a leisure horse, a good leisure horse, breed a good leisure horse. If you want Connemara ponies or you want whatever, breed what you want anyway, first of all. Like, don't end up breeding something just because somebody told you to breed it. Breed whatever you want, or you won't be passionate enough about it, because you need to be passionate because there's too many knocks in it. And that's why nobody can actually tell you exactly. Nobody can give you full advice on what to do, or else we'd all be doing it. You're going to have to run with something that works or doesn't work. But you have to be definitely committed, definitely committed.
Yeah. And in fairness, on the advice front and seeking advice, it's actually been one thing that you'll probably dismiss this, but that you've been very good for over the years. Like, you know, if you think about the different people that I've brought here, either individuals or groups, or the amount of time you're on the end of the phone. It's one definite thing that you've always been very open with people. You've always been willing to literally tell them what you think or give them advice.
I'd be knocked for that though, because people think that I'm self-opinionated. But I believe in what I do.
They don't have to second guess your answers, and I think that's one thing that's appreciated, is you'll wear your heart in your sleeve, but you're very passionate in what you do. But if they ask, even if we have a group visiting here or an individual breeder, be it from Ireland or otherwise, what's been great is that if they have asked you for your opinion on a particular thing, you've been very...
They got my opinion, didn't get any answers.
Yeah.
I'd be knocked for that.
But it's very useful. Like, even if there are young breeders that feel they want to pick up the phone to you or whatever, it's actually great that they will get your opinion and not a political answer or what they want to hear.
Yeah, well, they can listen, and they can take out the things if I say, look, I'm not right. But I do believe in where I'm going or what I'm doing. I might be wrong sometimes in what I do, but in the long-term path where I'm going, I believe in what I'm doing. Okay, and I have some results to say that keep trying and you might get there. So I'm driven by that. I have an absolutely understanding wife. Okay, and yeah, whoever it is, that young fella better meet one something like her, or you're in trouble. And look, I was fierce lucky myself in that, like, my mother was passionate about it. Probably more passionate about the breeding end of it than Seamus, her brother. Like, we got a lot of breeds that are intertwined between the two families that worked out very, very well. We were steeped in that we lived in Kilkenny, and Hattons lived just down the road, and Imperius and King Diamonds down the road, and we had Water Serpent in Kilkenny, and we had Bahrain just across the way. Like, we were steeped that we had stallions when people couldn't travel or you couldn't get semen. Then we're very lucky to have the foundation mares in the area. And then again, we're lucky to have the land that we had, because through generations, the mares that were basically on this land were built for this land. They were a lighter boned animal because they didn't need to be as strong. The land was lighter. It was easier to plough and stuff like that. So the original horse going back 100 years or 200 years didn't have to have the Clydesdale strength to work the land here. And yet when the guy put him on the trap, he actually had a step and all this. So it was, you know, that's very, I know this is very mystical to be thinking of it in those terms, but it actually comes true. We never kept a mare unless we actually loved it as a foal. We loved it as a yearling, 2-year-old, 3-year-old. Then it came along and it jumped. It didn't have to jump any higher than the table there in front of us. Just did it in the right shape, the right model, and had to be related well. And that was like, but it was earmarked way back maybe 3 years earlier to be a foal or a brood mare as a foal. Like, that'll make a brilliant brood mare. And that's what it was. And that's what we kept it. And maybe it stood to us. I don't know. I think it did. And maybe going forward in 30 years' time, when I am an old lad, I might be able to look back and say, Jesus, we were lucky enough. We're lucky we kept that mare back then and with all the rest, you know. But I'm banking on a couple of breeds, and I hope I'm right.